Hi guys, welcome back to your weekly Stoke City podcast, Every Step Along the Way. So this week we'll discuss the loss versus Palace, discuss the upcoming 50th anniversary game versus Blackpool, we'll look at all the news from around the club this week, and of course, another Stoke City quiz. And it's that time again, so welcome back to the pod, Dan. How are you doing? You all right, mate?
Yeah, I'm very good. Thank you very much, mate. How are you?
Yeah, not bad, thank you, mate. Not bad. I think you've the missy's causing trouble again, I believe.
Yeah. I want a season ticket for Stoke. I need a season ticket for the hospital, I think.
I was going to say, mate. Not long now, mate, till she pops. I can't wait to see little baby Buxton. Looking forward to that.
Well, according to the text message you see sending me from a little bed in the hospital at the minute, they are worried she may be on the way now.
Oh, God. If we hear a sudden leave, it's because Dan has to run up to hospital.
If you hear the doors shut.
Remember, you did say that you'd keep the podcast going as you were there, so.
I did.
You're a good lad. And obviously that other dulcet tone is, of course, Andy. Andy, welcome back to the pod.
I appreciate it, mate. It's been a pretty decent evening. And hopefully we can have a decent weekend with the results.
Yeah, good, mate. Absolutely. Because obviously people won't know, but we've been on the Seasiders pod this evening, haven't we?
Yeah.
Having a bit of a chat with them. Really nice down-to-earth guys, actually. Some of their comments that they have from some people were a bit delusional.
But... boring club with a boring manager.
Yeah. Yeah, it was interesting. But no, the guys themselves, some really good points about FFP and good to see things from their perception and stuff. So, no, it was pretty good. So if anyone wants to actually go and watch that, by the way, if you look for Seasiders pod, I think it is, on YouTube, you'll be able to see us ramble on for 40 minutes. But anyway, yeah, so I wish I could say, like, we're discussing a win here. Now, while we're not discussing a win, Palace. Now, we obviously did the first midweek podcast, obviously previewing the Palace game. I'll start with you, really, Dan. So, in terms of performance, what was your overall thoughts, mate?
Well, I was really impressed. I mean, obviously, we were disappointed with Bournemouth at the weekend, not so much in the performance, but the sort of lack of a bit of luck maybe at the end just to get something from it that the lads... effort deserved, if nothing else. And it was a bit similar again, wasn't it, in midweek? Which I think a lot of people maybe can say it's happened too often where we've been winning and conceded, but we're away to a Premier League side here, and we've got a lot of players missing, a lot of players who we've brought in to strengthen the side in January weren't available. And I thought we give a very good account of ourselves. I thought we took the game to them. If you read a lot of Crystal Palace's supporters, what they think, I've seen a lot on social media where they were very disappointed and thought that they were very much on the back foot for the whole of the game and very lucky to come away with the win.
I was going to say, there was a lot of very lucky comments, weren't there?
Yeah, and I think that's what it was. I think they just, they... For example, put it this way, Jack Butland flapped it across. It fell to Liam Moore, and the guy got back and headed it off the line, didn't he?
Yeah. He got man of the match
Bond
for that.
Flaps it across, and it ended up in the back of the net. And I suppose that's just the difference, isn't it?
I was going to say, yeah. I mean, if you look at them goals, I mean, the first one wasn't a bloody corner in the first place. That was... stupid for a start. And then, yeah, of all places that Bonham could have tried to punch. I remember at the time, though, mate, he should not be punching that. I don't get it with goalkeepers punching every flipping time. Just catch the damn ball. And we had three players around him, and they were all Stoke players. He was not under any pressure, but he did this Superman dive. And I'm not saying it was all his fault. I mean, it's sod's law that he just falls to the one place you don't want it to fall. But if he catches that ball... it doesn't happen. The situation doesn't occur. So I think that was the frustrating thing for me. And somebody made a comment about, Bonham, he's weird. He's done nothing wrong, but I'm not confident in him. And I don't know what it is. I think there's a lot of people with that shared opinion. And me personally, mate, we'll get onto teams later, but I want to see Joe Bursic back on the team. I'm one of them people where I don't know why, I just don't like him.
Yeah, he just doesn't fill me with confidence either. I'm with you definitely on that one. I think Bursic helps us play better, helps us play out better. And I think he's 21 years old and he's played for England. I saw a tweet, I think we retweeted him. He's played for England at under 17, under 18, 19, 20, 21, won the under 17 World Cup, 100 appearances before the age of 21. You know, there's not many goalkeepers that have got that kind of resume. You just got to, he's well ahead of a standard goalkeeping career, isn't he? Most 21-year-olds aren't playing Championship or above football at this stage. You know, they're out on loan and in the non-leagues or in the lower leagues and gaining a bit of experience there. He's been thrust, maybe he's had his progression accelerated by an injury crisis last season. And after that now, we're maybe expecting too much from him, but it's only because of the sort of the promise that he's shown us as such a young man. And I think we just got to stick with him. There's going to be ups and downs, the same as there would be with a 21-year-old centre midfielder or a 21-year-old striker, 21-year-old left back. You know, they're going to have ups and downs, but it's just in that position it gets highlighted a bit more. And to be honest, I don't particularly know what he did so wrong to get a drop for Bournemouth. I don't particularly remember him making any horrific mistakes lately.
No, I think, I can't remember what it was now, but made a comment that he was, we've changed the goalkeeper because we've been conceding a lot. And like you say, mate, I don't think you can really blame Joe for that. I mean, Andy, do you think that, I saw this comment. So we have probably the weakest set of goalkeepers we've had for a long time in Fielding, Bonham and Joe. I'll be honest, I probably quite agree with that almost. I mean, I won't count Joe as a weak goalkeeper for the reasons Dan's just mentioned. But, I mean, what's your thoughts on the whole Bonham and also the collective of goalkeepers? Do you think we're going to have to see another couple of keepers come in the summer?
Mate, I think we do need, stronger goalkeepers that are going to be pushing each other to that number one spot. Joe Bursic is obviously, he's been out injured with a knee injury, might still be slightly recovering from that, but it's not really, the goals we've been conceding are not, really the goalkeeper's fault. It's mainly the defence. Like, we spoke about the goals that Joe's been conceding. It's normally low-driven crosses and the attackers are getting to it. Like, for example, Cameron Jerome's goal for Luton when they played us. It's not much he can really do about it. With Bonham, he does like to punch it out. And yes, that can put him at, the risk of conceding, which he has done. But if Michael O'Neill's complaining about, wanting to change the goalkeeper and complain about how much we're conceding, and then we change the goalkeeper and it happens again, hasn't he got to look at the defence as well and think, there's one or two players here who either need more training or just not putting in the performances that, we need as a club who within, by the end of next season want to be in those playoff places or thereabouts.
Yeah, and I think that's the one position for me that you just can't keep switching and changing every week. The defence has got to have confidence in its goalkeeper. So, no, absolutely, we need to sort that out. Whether it's Joe or whether it's somebody else, but you're right, we need that number one keeper. But
if we do get a number one in, maybe Joe can learn, from an experienced keeper who has quality on what to be the future number one of Stoke City.
Well, yeah, we'll see. It's all going to come down to money again, isn't it? Let's be honest. But yeah, we'll definitely see. I think Fielding, obviously, he's just a stopgap as a case of an emergency. But
he's a training emergency.
Yeah, and I thought one thing I wanted to pull out from the Palace game, Joe Allen, another solid game from Joe. I think he's picked up in the last couple of weeks, especially. I mean, to be fair, they were all pretty good, but I thought Joe Allen was brilliant. Sawyers. Again, Sawyers was great for a player who's just come back.
He showed what quality we've been missing, doesn't he? And I know we give Chester a lot of stick. I thought he played okay for once.
Other than his slip that nearly cost us a goal.
Oh, God. Apart from that, there was one where I think it was when Crystal Palace were on the attack. He got nutmegged. And then he didn't give up. He won it back. Managed to get it down wing. And then Josh Timon, I think it was the one, where he slashed his shot so far wide. But yeah, Josh Timon again showing the quality we have at left back. It's a quality squad, and we showed that. To be fair, I thought that Crystal Palace were the Championship team in that game.
Yeah, too right. Too right it was. Yeah, so, I mean, I must admit, I'm trying to think of the subs that came on. I was looking, obviously, the main thing. I mean, let's say Nick Powell. I actually didn't think Nick had a good game. I don't know about you. He had the moments. Dan, you made a couple of comments on Nick Powell, I think, on Twitter that I saw. Can't exactly remember what you said, but I didn't think Nick had a great game. He didn't do anything wrong. He helped to make it stick up there a little bit more. But I wouldn't say that he had a particularly good game for me.
I thought he got involved. And the thing was, they recognised his danger. So every time the ball came anywhere near him, they just fouled him. So his job, I think, ended up being, I'm just going to win a load of free kicks here today because I'm just going to be kicked off the park. And I think maybe they were looking at him and think, like, oh, he's always injured. He's made a glass. Just kick him. We'll either take him, we'll eventually take him out of the game, but we'll stop him doing anything. But I think that was their main tactic when he got the ball, was just foul him. By any means necessary, just foul him. A bit like teams do with Zaha, probably, with them. Just foul him.
Yeah, that's just going to be the problem with him, isn't it? But, yeah, I thought Brown and Campbell didn't do anything when they come on, personally. They barely touched the ball. But, you know, they didn't exactly have much time to do much at all, to be fair. But either way, I think Tyrese still needs more game time. We're not going to see him properly, are we, till next season, let's be honest. It's quite clear that he's just still not getting up to speed yet. But yeah, I mean, I think other than that, I think we've probably covered that quite well, unless you guys have got anything else you want to add that we've missed. Or
not really. It was just a solid performance from the lads. And if we can play that week in, week out in the league, mate, we will finish at least top 10, I'd say. Obviously, it's tough with the Championship. Things can change, you know, in an instant. But if we are forseeking this run that we want, it would be, you know, a great, great help.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, and a couple of... Also, go on,
yeah,
Dan.
Go on, Dan. I'll finish after you.
I was going to say as well, like, I think our man of the match poll was quite hotly contested, wasn't it, between a couple of players. Mm-hmm. And obviously Josh Tymon was one of them. And obviously he got the goal as well. And I think it's interesting that the formation we play there, three centre-backs and the wing-backs, we get the very best out of Josh Tymon. And he hasn't really been impacting games recently with a four at the back. He's not half as good a player in a back four. So do we maybe look to push him on and play him as part of a left wing in that formation? Or do we, you know, that's the thing, like, you know, if we play five at the back, he's in the game. With four at the back, do we just go for a more solid left back? Because he's not terrible defending. He's a lot better than he was. He's getting better at it, but it's still, we could maybe have a more solid left back option because he's not getting forward in that role either.
And then you could potentially push Josh further forward.
Yeah. Or even play two different formations, one home, one away, wing backs away, and a 4-3-3 at home, a more attacking formation. Yeah.
And then the final thing I will mention, do you remember Palace fans going on about Mike Olise and Wilfred Zaha causing problems? I don't think they really did anything. The only thing I remember of Zaha was trying to start a fight with Liam Moore. And
I saw the stats on him.
I don't think Liam Moore is a player you really want to mess with at all. He's built like a brick, you know, brick wall.
Yeah, he is, mate. I'm just going to try and see if I can find the stats on it. But I remember Zaha, somebody made that comment about him, and it was something like zero shots, zero assists, a really small amount of dribbles. He had a pretty disastrous game, to be honest with you.
Here we are. 90 minutes played, zero goals, zero assists, obviously. 14 out of 18 passes accurate. So he made 18 passes in the whole game. Four dribbles. As a player who people prize, you know, to be 30, 40, 50 million, really just wasn't at all that quality.
No, absolutely not. And then just to finish off this section, so we got the polls that Dan alluded to just. So two different polls, one on Twitter, one on Facebook. So start with the Twitter one. So, yeah, your options were Moore, Tymon, or Sawyers. Alan was mentioned a few times as an extra as well, so he will go into the table for the scores. Sadly, it obviously limits the options I can choose, so I had to be picky. So third place was Moore with 7%, which I thought was very harsh, but 7%. Now, this is the closest we've had all season. In second place was Sawyers with 43%. And at first was Timon with 44%. There's 1% difference. The rest of it was Moore and others. So, yeah, the others being Joe Allen. Now, the Facebook one, now this is what was interesting. Complete contrast. Third place was Sawyers with 32 votes. Second was Timon with 45 votes. And first was Moore with 108. Massive difference.
I think it really shows how good the squad was. Yeah, as a collected split. Vote, it was pretty even all over the board for those three.
Yeah, it was, mate. And in terms of some of the comments, I want to just bring up some of the comments because I can't mention them all, so I'm sorry if I've missed anyone's out. But so Daniel Martin, I thought several of the lads could get it, but what a difference it makes to the game when a referee can do his job. Great performance, Stoke. Now let's back it up this weekend. John, as mentioned, Liam Moore's been excellent since coming here from the swap deal that took into Reading. He put a shift in tonight, but so did the rest of the team. Unlucky with the lob that was cleared off the line. He thought Timon took his goal well, but one goal was never going to be enough. Dean Wilton says played really well tonight, put a shift in, up the mighty Potters. Michael Butler, I watched Moore against Wigan. He was very vocal and spent all his time on the pitch organising the defence, and I can definitely see why he was captain. Rich Lely, we were by far the better side. And then just a couple more. So Josh Shruff, Liam Moore's been brilliant when he's played for us. Timon by a mile, says Neil Burke. And Liam Foster said Liam Moore was class, as was the whole team, but he really stood out. So, yeah, quite universal comments. And there were more, but like I said, there's just too many to mention.
I'll say one comment on Liam Moore for you. Do you remember when we first were linked to him, seeing the comments from Reading saying, oh, he's just going to be another James Chester?
Yes.
He is the complete opposite.
Yeah, he's got a lot more presence. He's been pretty solid. I think we all were a bit underwhelmed, let's be honest. I think we all were. Weren't judging him, but I think we were very underwhelmed, if I remember rightly. Yeah. So, okay, cool. Well, that kind of does it for the actual Palace game. Let's go and have a look at the Stoke City news. Okay, so there's not much news actually in the Stoke remit, to be honest with you. But first off, now today the financials have been released from the club. Quite a big debt again released. So yeah, I mean, for a reminder, by the way, on the whole FFP thing, if anyone's new to the pod or hasn't listened to it, firstly, where have you been? But secondly, we actually do have Kieran Maguire, who's very much known as the FFP expert. So Kieran did an hour's podcast with us, went through exactly how it all works. So if you've got any particular queries or questions, go back to the channels on whatever kind of platform you're using, and then go and check out the kind of, you know, just the whole ins and outs of how it all works. It really is fascinating. We're going to try and get him back on sometime soon if we can. Just to kind of run through the latest figures. So I'm sure you all want to listen to that. But so anyway, guys, so yeah, FFP released. It was a good 50 million plus debt, unfortunately. What was your initial reaction to that? Were you surprised or kind of what you expected?
Yeah, it was pretty much... it's weird, isn't it? Because we don't know what actually, how much of that actually contributes to FFP. Which again, that podcast that we did before sort of explained it all. That a lot of the costs can get taken out, and there's a lot of allowances for and things that aren't countable, sort of your academy costs and things like that. So it's a bit strange, as in, like, you know, we haven't had to cut back there. We can spend as much as we want on the academy. It doesn't matter. We could go and upgrade the facilities and build 25 academy domes if we wanted to. Across, you know, wouldn't come into play with FFP. Might get some good plays coming through, but but yeah. So I was expecting a big figure, and I think we have to look past the headline number.
Yeah, which is what Kieran said, wasn't it, to us, what he said.
It's always a shock, and it's good for newspapers and stuff, you know, to band numbers around and go, oh, look at this. Stoke have lost £140 million in two seasons. And everyone goes, oh, my God, how have they not done FFP? Well, it's only when you dig deeper that you actually work out why they haven't fallen foul of FFP. And obviously, we're hoping that we haven't. The indications are that we are just scraping the right side of it again. So we'll have to, hopefully, like I say, we can get Kieran on to give us a bit more meat on the bone to that.
Yeah, it'd be fascinating. I saw the accounts. I think, unfortunately, Bet365 have only made something like, I think, £469 million this year. I mean, got a feel for them, to be honest. At least up until March 2021, anyway. I'm not quite sure how they're going to cope with that type of a profit. But again, I think considering the world we live in, it's pretty impressive. And I think, you know, one thing, the owners again get a lot of stake in what they're doing with O'Neill when O'Neill was getting criticised as somebody who they don't want at the club anymore. And I saw some comments towards the owners made, and I'm not going to call you out because it's not what we do here. But someone saying, you know, something needs to change at the top. We need to get rid. And I guarantee you, you get rid of the Coates family, this club will be gone quicker than you can imagine. We have luckily no real official debt, and they won't call it in. But if you think there's another owner out there who's as rich as the Peter Coates and all the Coates family, you got another thing coming. So count your chickens. They're going to make mistakes, and you're very, very lucky that we've got those owners. So that's just my piece on that from a comment I saw last night. Andy, what's your whole take on this loss, mate? Are you bothered at any particular readings? I mean, I know it's quite complex, the accounts that were released, but any particular insight, mate?
Not really, mate. Obviously, we've gone down from, was it 87 million to 55 million losses this season. It's financial fair play. Obviously, you'd say 99% of clubs have losses. Ours, probably one of the highest. But like we've seen throughout the season and for the past seasons, articles coming out of, you know, saying, oh, yeah, Stoke are going to get hit with points deduction. Stoke are going to get hit with this. Stoke are going to hit with that. If that was the case, there would be, you know, Sky Sports coverage of it. There'd be general news coverage of it. But I don't see any worry. I don't think the Coates fans, the Coates family, really want to run Stoke into that danger. And if they felt like they were, they would probably cut back on quite a bit of spending. And that's why at the moment we're signing players on loans and freeze. And if we are signing players for money, it's going to be players going out for the value of that single player or two players, however we're going to bring in.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think I looked at how many points Derby got deducted. They got 9 points deducted for FFP. Now, that was after their owner clearly tried to hide and deceive the EFL. Now, for me, even if Stoke are slightly on the wrong side of it, it wouldn't surprise me for us to not get any point deductions. But secondly, even if we did, we ain't going to get given 9. There's no way. There's no way we're going to get 9 because we've been, you know, we speak to the league about it. You know, we've done our absolute best to get it down. We've clearly reduced the wage bill, which, again, all these are factors as per Kieran's, you know, podcast. It was all factors. So I reckon even if we got deducted 3 or 6 points, it's 2 wins. It's absolutely nothing to be concerned about because people think, oh, point deductions. Oh, we're going to be deducted, you know, like Derby and Reading. We're not. It's not going to be that bad. So I wouldn't panic either way. I really wouldn't.
If we got deducted, you know, the same amount that Derby did, it would obviously send out a strong message that the EFL aren't standing for it. But it would be pointless considering the fact that we're not in that bad of a financial situation. And I really don't see us, unless something terribly goes wrong with the running of the club, us getting any sanctions really for it.
You have to remember as well, Derby got deducted 21 points, but 12 of those were for going into administration. And that isn't happening at Stoke, not while the Coates family are around anyway.
No.
And like you say, they say the maximum you can be deducted is 12. Well, if Derby only got 9 and they didn't release their accounts for about 4 years, did they? Because if your accounts aren't put in, how can you be proven to be, over the limits for FFP? Because there's nothing there.
And that, it was the whole stadium thing as well, wasn't it? The whole selling his stadium at an inflated price. So and clearly that, and then, trying to fudge it.
And then he the way that they amortise any players that you sign, where the say if you sign a player for £20 million on a 5-year contract, that's £4 million a year. They did it so that there was like very little going up and then a massive amount at the end, basically trying to give himself 4 years, say, to get promotion, spending an absolute fortune. But in that very last year, accountancy wise, everything will go through all in one go from like 4 years worth of spending or so. So that's what he did. He just tried to trick him at every opportunity, didn't he?
But if any Stoke fans are listening that are concerned, probably the very worst is going to be 6 points, which is 2 wins, nothing we can't get over the course of a season. So don't worry about it. But anyway, I think that kind of covers the FFP side, and yeah, we'll hopefully get an update for you shortly. Now, secondly, this weekend's game is the 50th anniversary of the 1972 League Cup win, which is absolutely incredible to think that it's still been 50 years since we've actually won anything decent. Well, not quite. I mean, also glass, I suppose. It's not that bad.
We also came close in 2011-12, wasn't it?
We did. But I must admit, the auto glass, mate, I'd never forget that. That was just a dream. But anyway, yeah, so I'm sure the club have got a number of different plans. I know this evening there's been the meal that they've had. So all the surviving members of the 72 squad are obviously there, obviously enjoying that. Now, they did the actual shirt side of things. So the sponsored shirt, the 1,972 shirts. Did either of you have that particular thing?
I didn't get a chance to get one, mate. By the time I had the funds, they were all sold out.
I have got one.
Nice one, Daniel.
Still unworn.
Are you leaving it in the box, or is it going into like a case or something?
I am leaving it in the... It's in the box. Like I say, unworn. I've looked at it. Put it back.
He's like, that's enough for me.
Yeah, it's very, very nice. It's very nice. Yeah.
Are you going to get like framed up in that?
Yeah, I think I am. Just how you do it, because it's got the team down the side. But obviously, it comes with like the team sheet kind of thing as well. So it's interesting how we do it.
I think the only criticism I saw about the shirts was some of the lettering being a bit wonky. And not quite being perfect. I saw a lot of complaints about that. But I think overall it was received really well. The club are aware of that, by the way. It's not a big surprise to them that they know it's been done. So wherever they produced them, unfortunately, I haven't been able to line up for whatever reason. But yeah, like I say, I know a lot of people have had them. I think the vast majority of everyone is really happy with them. I thought it was a great idea by the club. It was good to see. But it's good to see how this weekend goes. Good to see the people on the pitch. I mean, I would imagine this is going to be one of the last times that those guys all get together. I mean, they've got to be really getting on now, haven't they?
Yeah, well, actually, they aren't all there, though, are they? Because George Easton, unfortunately, is hospitalised, isn't he? He's come over and fell ill after coming over from South Africa, where he lives now. So, yeah, get well soon, George.
Yeah, absolutely, mate. But it was good to see everybody there. We've got 2,500 fans coming from Blackpool. I haven't heard how many Stoke tickets we've actually sold. Now, I think we've got just over 21,000 season tickets.
Yeah, obviously you can get the ticket prices. So if you are a season card holder and you do want to get some of your friends and family down, you can get unlimited tickets for a lot cheaper a price. I think it's 11 quid for an adult and 6 quid for a child. Something like that.
You're right, mate. That includes the booking fee thing.
Yeah, exactly. But considering they're bringing, was it around 2,500, which is, you know, pretty much the full allocation that they get in the away end. And if we can fill up that main stand as well, you're looking at pretty much, you could maybe even say 28,000, which I think it would show the lads mainly that, you know, the club still got some back into it.
Yeah, because it's been a bit disappointing, hasn't it? I know during that midweek game, it was reported like 18,000 people, and there clearly was not 18,000 there.
No.
You know, so it's things like that. But you're right, mate. It wouldn't be great just to get towards that 30k barrier. It's
and
been
have a
long,
full
long
house
time.
Again.
Yeah.
Yeah. If nothing more, it'd be great for those, you know, them lads who. I mean, you said 50 years is a long time since we won anything. You have to bear in mind, it took over 100 years for us to win that. And, you know, them lads can stand in the middle of that pitch. Hopefully, we bring them out as close to kickoff as possible so Definitely. That, you know, the place is packed out. And you know, I encourage anyone. I know people who like, you know, like a beer in the concourse before the game and all that. Get yourself in the stand. Get yourself in the stand. For when them lads come out and let them look around, look at them stand in the middle of that pitch, look at all four sides and see a packed out stadium, and then they can think, you know, we've contributed towards this. You know, winning that trophy all them years ago, it's helped to build this club into what it is here now.
And hopefully we don't do anything at half time. Don't do any of that stuff at half time, please, Stoke, because
God.
If you do, there won't be anyone there to see it. They did it with the Shawcross. And it was a big miscalculation.
If you're like a club like Chelsea, you can sacrifice it because you'll still have it. Chelsea's about 40, 50,000 capacity. You'll still have about 38,000 in. But with a stadium which is like Stoke's, like obviously the main stand, that doesn't get many people anyway. So at half time, that's going to have half the people in there as it is.
Yeah. So let's just hope they don't mess it up. I think.
Give an announcement over the PA 10 minutes before.
Yeah, do something. Okay, cool. And then the third piece of news. So it's more our kind of friends at Duck Magazine. I'm sure most of you have heard of Duck Magazine, but they have a physical and a kind of virtual obviously magazine that goes across. There's some really great interviews in there. They always they've done the ones with Peter Thorne and various different people, and they've got an interesting few bits. Now I'm not going to give everything away because I want anyone to go out there and try and buy it. I mean, you'll find Duck Magazine, by the way, on Twitter as well, if you want to look them up and find out how to get them. But basically those guys will be outside obviously the kind of main Delilah's Bar, so they'll be out there from about 20 past one. They'll be outside the club shop as well. It's very clear as day who they are. You'll hear them. So you'll be able to pick up a copy. There's very limited copies for this one. Obviously, the 50th anniversary, they've got some really interesting interviews. Now, Dan, one of them was with Nick Powell, I believe. I don't think they'll mind us telling that. So, yeah, Nick Powell was one of them, mate. And we won't give too much away, but, you know, he goes into about his contract, doesn't he, and you know, his hopes and what he wants to leave as a legacy, if I remember rightly.
Yes, it sounds like I say, he's not happy to go yet. And we, you know, we can rest assured that he will be in a Stoke shirt next season. But yeah, there's a lot of interesting stuff said. And I definitely encourage anybody to go and get a copy and have a read of it, because it's fascinating from a man who, let's face it, we don't hear much from Nick Powell, do we? He lets his talk. He lets his feet do the talking on the pitch.
He's not much for interviews, is he?
No, he didn't think he's. You know, he doesn't crave the spotlight in that kind of sense, does he? So you know, the well done to Duck Magazine to sort of nailing him down for that. And like I say, I'd encourage anybody to go and have a read, because it's going to be quite fascinating.
Absolutely, mate. And like I say, the digital copies, because I know obviously we know our analytics quite well. We always look at it, and we obviously know that a good majority of you listen from the UK, but there's a lot of people in the US and about, I think, 26 other countries. So obviously, again, they've got a digital version. So just contact them about the digital version, and I'm sure they'll sort it out. So make sure you head over on there on Twitter. Dan. Under-18s, under-23s, any particular updates on that front this week?
Obviously, we gave just a brief update from last weekend on the Crystal Palace one. Since then, the under-23s have had a match. They played against Sunderland on Monday night and won out 3-0 winners. So that was quite nice, including a goal for Emre Tezgal. So he's getting himself in amongst the goals at under-23 level nowadays. God. And then obviously he's not the only striker on the books, is he, at under-23 level, but you know, We seem to be having some nice, prolific strikers in our ranks. Because we've also got James Taylor as well, haven't we? Douglas James Taylor. He got both the second and third goals on Monday night as well. So yeah, he's rattling them in this season as well. Yeah, I think that's 7-16. Seven and 16 in the leagues. He's all together for the under 23s. He scored 13 goals in 18 games this season.
Wow.
So yeah, he's not doing too bad himself. I think we picked him up from Salford in 2020, by the way. So yeah, he's 20 years old. Maybe he's going to get his chance before the season's out, especially if we don't, go on a good run and the season starts petering out.
Can I experiment?
I can see him getting a couple of games. Just why not?
So there's another player that's going to be breaking through sometime soon. We're starting to really churn these players out. I mean, obviously, time will tell whether they are the next big thing, but it's a lot more promising than it has been in recent years.
Especially like Nathan Jones, Gary Rowett, they didn't give him a chance at all. And then Michael O'Neill, obviously, he's been an international manager. He's obviously at times had to use young players, and if he sees a young player doing well, he would promote them over experienced players, and it's good to see him do it. Obviously, this season, DiMaggio's burst on into the scene, and the loan signs we've done have all been young players, pretty much.
Yeah, wow, I think as well, you have to think the signings that O'Neill likes to make, are players who are young. And I think he's very clever in that if they don't work out, you've always got that resale value. So you're not actually, whatever you pay for a player, if you decide in 12, 18 months' time they're not the player for you, or even in 6 months' time in Sam Surya's case, you're likely to recoup a lot of that money. So even if you pay £4 million on a 22-year-old, if at 24, with 2 years of contract left, you decide he's not for you, you're probably going to get a couple of million back, even if he's not done very well because of his age and the experience that he will have gained and whatever. So it's probably it's a very financial sound way of running a club as well, investing in youth, whether that be buying young players or investing in bringing young players through your system. And I think as well, we're saying, oh, we've got a lot of young players coming through. It's funny, but I can say some of these players, we brought DiMaggio in from Southampton. This Douglas James Taylor's come from Salford. We got Tyrese from Manchester City a few years back. When players can see a pathway to the first team and can see other youngsters progressing, Joe Bersick's another one, came from Wimbledon, AFC Wimbledon. Promising young players will join us because they see that we have a system and a manager who is going to let them progress. And they think, well, the facilities are obviously here. The youth coaches are obviously doing the job well. And there's a natural progression into the first team. And that's important for players. And you wonder what, it's another thing. When that's not been there, we've been, for a long time, we were a club that was going on a very upward curve very quickly. And you think we were a mid to bottom end of championship side, all of a sudden we were on the verge of the playoffs. Then we were automatically promoted. Then we were settled in the Premier League. And then we were in the FA Cup final in Europe. Then we were in the top 10 in the Premier League. All of a sudden, if you're ninth in the Premier League, it's very difficult to bring any youngster through who's good enough. And that's why we didn't at that stage. But the players we were attracting, we moved forward so quickly as a club that unless you have a natural talent who comes through your system, maybe as we have got with like a Tesgal now, or we had as a Andy Wilkinson back then, you are going to struggle to bring players in because your club is progressing so quickly.
Yeah.
We're on the other side of that now. We've got some of these players like Campbell and Bersick and that who probably signed for us when we were Premier League or just relegated from the Premier League. And so actually now they are going to be coming into the side. And because now we've got this, like I say, natural pathway with them, Suter, Time and a lot of others, other players are now looking at us as a good club to come and play for. And we've got a manager as well in Mark O'Neill who's not scared to chuck them if he thinks they're good enough. They're old enough. He doesn't care, you know, what the base certificate says, does he? He just cares about their ability on the pitch.
Yeah, absolutely, mate. Either way, the future looks very, very bright. So that pretty much does it for the news this week, guys. So let's go on and have a look at Blackpool this weekend.
Yes, so hopefully a full house will be there on Saturday or near enough to. And we welcome Blackpool with, for anybody who does believe we still have playoff hopes, I think those are dwindling by the week, obviously. But we very, very much need to get back to winning ways regardless on Saturday. Yeah, because this is actually our longest winless run this season, 4 games, which in itself isn't actually that bad of a statistic. I think to only go 4 games without a win, you know, as you most. You know, I don't think there's many teams, you know, around 15th, 16th in leagues who can have that. But yeah, if you do miss the kickoff, other than obviously greeting the 72 lads beforehand, you may as well just turn up at half time if it wasn't for that, because the last 8 games for Stoke, we've only scored in 3 of them in the first half. And Blackpool, the first half has been the top scoring half in 1 of their last 8 games. So yeah, don't expect much entertainment before half time.
I was going to say, Andy, Dan rather, when me and you went to Blackpool away, there was nothing in it for like 60 odd minutes, was there?
No, it was. But yes, Neil Critchley celebrated 2 years in charge of Blackpool this week. He's never beaten Stoke in his managerial career. I'll just throw that one out there. But they have hit a sticky patch on the travels of Blackpool. No win since October, so that's 9 games without a win away from home for them. Incidentally, that win came 1 game before they played Stoke at home when we beat them there. Talking of 9 games, Stoke have only lost once in their last 9 games to Blackpool, dating back to 2001. And that was a 1-0 home defeat in 2010, where DJ Campbell scored the 1 goal in that game. The last home defeat before that came 3-1 in 1998. Now, this game was a bit of a turning point in our season. I know we're looking for it to be a bit of a turning point for us on Saturday, but it had the reverse effect in 98. Now, if you can remember, Brian Little was the manager. And before that game, we were runaway leaders. We had 8 wins from 9 games. But from that point onwards, the last 37 games only gave us 45 points. So we went from runaway leaders to sort of relegation form. So, yeah, we actually finished the season 8th. And if you took the last 25 games of that season, which was in League One, remember, we would have finished 23rd in the table with just Macclesfield below us. So if people think we're in a bad run of form now and you know, getting a bit, the toys are coming out the pram saying Michael O'Neill out, then yeah, just think, you know, we've had it a lot worse at times and it can get a lot worse yet. Some players who've played for both clubs, of course, we've got Sir Stanley Matthews. Richard Keogh, who's currently in the Blackpool ranks, came through the youth team at Stoke. Also came through the youth team at Stoke and played for Blackpool was Andy Wilkinson, who went there on loan. Carl Dickinson went there on loan. Martin Patterson went there on loan. Also, we've had Jordan Thompson, obviously, is in Stoke's team. We signed him from Blackpool. Danny Pugh, Charlie Adam, Mark Warrington and Dom Telford, we signed from Blackpool. Tom Ince, of course, played under his father at Blackpool. As you just said there, Mike, Ricardo Fuller, James Beattie, Marlon Brooms, Phil Robinson, Lee Hendry.
Brooms.
Richard Forsyth, Tony Alice, Steve Banks, Paul Stewart. And then we've got some managerial ones. Nigel Worthington managed Blackpool, played for Stoke. Gary Megson managed both sides. And then Alan Ball as well has been involved with both Blackpool and Stoke.
Oh. And what about Mike Sheeran?
Mike Sheeran, run. Does she run, run?
Run. We all, by the way, we don't really know a lot of these beforehand. That was one of the quizzes on the Seasiders podcast. So me and Andy are claiming to know all these players, mate. And yeah, we just remember them off that. Wish that would have been this week's quiz. That would have been good.
Yes. So, Andy, I mean, you were far away with your stats, mate. What have you got for us?
Well, Stoke are actually looking to complete a league double over Blackpool. The first time since 1999-2000 season. Like you mentioned, with DJ Campbell scoring the goal in 2010, that was Blackpool's first away league visit to Stoke since December. He scored in that game. It's the first time since 2010 that they've come to our ground. Since us beating Swansea 3-0 in the league, obviously we've gone winless in those games, two draws and two losses. But to add to what Dan said, we've conceded exactly two goals in each of those games. Additionally, Blackpool have found the net in each of their last 12 championship games, which is their longest scoring run in the competition since October to December 2012, where they scored in 14 games. Gary Medine, who is probably going to start for Blackpool at the weekend, has scored 7 championship goals for Blackpool this season, which is his second most in a single season, which the last time he scored more was 2017-18 for Bolton, where he scored 10. And 2 of his goals this season have come away from home, but he's never scored 3 on the road in a single championship season before. Now, going on to their injury news, one of their main fullbacks, Jordan Gabriel, left the field at halftime. He's probably going to be out for a couple of weeks with a knock. James Husband is coming back from injury, but he is injured still a bit. Everyone's saying he's fit, but we believe Dujon Sterling is going to take his place. Speaking of Richard Keogh, obviously returning to Stoke for this game, but he will be still injured, so he won't actually make a return. Sonny Carey as well, he has had limited game time for Blackpool this season. He's out with a foot injury. He's going to be coming back in a few months. Keshi Anderson injured his hamstring in the FA Cup defeat to Hartlepool early on in the season. He's going to be out for another couple of months. Chris Maxwell has been the backup to Daniel Grimshaw throughout the season, but recently has gotten injured, so he's going to be out for a couple of weeks. And then the normal midfield pairing of Matty Virtue and Grant Ward are both out injured until the end of the season.
So do they actually have any fit players?
Well, we thought our injury situation was bad, but looks like we had the bit of the spine of the team. They've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 players out. So they've got pretty much a team out.
Bloody.
Yeah, but we found out a fact, didn't we, that they've had injuries all season. It hasn't really hampered them at all.
Yeah, so are the first team players who are out then? You
most of
the
them, yeah.
Pocket, they are actually, would be starting first team
yeah,
players.
Yeah, they would be. Most of them would be starting except for James Husband, who's a backup, and then Chris Maxwell, who's been backup to Daniel Grimshaw.
So they've got a lot of injuries themselves. And our injury situation, I mean, other than obviously Harry Souttar, we're looking in good shape, aren't we? Everybody's
yeah.
getting there, if not.
It's nice to see an injury list of one player.
It's a shame it's like the best player possibly that we have. But yeah, it's just the one.
Yeah.
So, yes, I mean, we've got, this is 3 games in a week. There are, like I say, certain players coming back into a bit of fitness. We've just got to protect maybe a couple. I mean, Mike, what kind of team are you going to be putting? What time team would you be putting out this weekend?
So it's nothing dramatic, mate. I think Andy's probably going to try and change his formation. But me personally, I'm playing the whole 4-2-3-1. So I'm going to stick with that formation. Now, I'm going to be going for a couple of basic changes. So we're going to go for Bursic, obviously in goal, of course. So he's going to be dropping in for Bonham. Smith is going to go on the right. I'm dropping Wilmot entirely from the squad. So Smith is going to go right back. Jagielka and Howard Bellis are going to be the 2 centre-backs. I feel a bit harsh on Moore here. Maybe potentially Moore for Howard Bellis, but I still... Ray Ballas. So, yeah, Jagielka and Hall Ballas. Timon obviously has to go on the left. Now, this is where we're going to probably differ in teams. So, for me, it's going to be Allen alongside Sawyers as those two kind of more holding type of midfielders. On the right of the 3 midfield is going to be Campbell. Behind the striker is Powell. And on the left is Bidace. And you won't be surprised to hear that Maja goes up front.
Wow. There's one name missing there. No Lewis Baker.
No Lewis. I was going to clock you up on that.
Well,
no
yeah,
Baker.
Now, trust me, I want him to play, but I'm trying to think. He's not going to drop Allen, and Sawyer's had an absolute screamer. So I'm just thinking, again, Baker, is he needed, I suppose, is the question. It's a tricky one. I'd have to completely change formation, which obviously, if you were to put Baker in, you'd probably have to drop Sawyer to put Baker in. Yeah, it was a bit harsh. It was a difficult decision. I've got two teams, and Baker makes one and doesn't make the other. So I've given you one, which is probably the more of the controversial team, shall we say.
Yeah, I mean, what about you? Yes, definitely a controversial take. Lewis Baker not playing. I mean, would you, is he in your team, Andy?
He is. Defensive line's very similar. I reverted back to the 5-3-2 in my predictions. I think Michael O'Neill obviously trialed and tested the 4-2-3-1. It did okay to start out with, but then results didn't go his way. And since coming back with the five at the back or three at the back, depending on how you want to see it, we have played very well. Like, I know we did lose to Crystal Palace and we did lose to Bournemouth, but we fought extremely hard in them. And I thought we were the better team in both of them. So I've gone with Bursic in goal. Was originally going to go with Bonham, but it's tough to know who's going to be that number one goalkeeper at the moment. Smith staying in at right back. And then I've gone with Moore, Jagielka and Harwood Bellis at the centre-back pairing with Tymon at that left wing-back position. Midfield, yet again, is different. I've gone with Allen and Baker with Sawyers playing a little bit ahead. And then I've got Madra at striker with Powell playing that secondary striker who can also come back into midfield.
Probably a team that I think most people would have gone for, actually, by the sounds of it.
I think in that formation, that's probably the if he plays that formation, that's probably the team sort of picks itself, if you like.
We've been able to do that a lot recently, though, haven't we?
Yeah, probably the unlucky players there being Jordan Thompson, probably. The only unlucky one from Tuesday, I'd say.
I'd bring him off the bench.
For Baker. Myself, I'm going with the 4-2-3-1. Quite similar to Mike, only I've got Baker in instead of Sawyers. So yeah, Bursic in goal, Smith, Jagielka, Howard Bally's timing, Alan Baker sitting, Campbell, Powell, Philogene Bidace, and then Major up front. I think Tyrese on the right are the three for me. Philogene Bidace, he's had a bit of a rest after obviously getting used to being kicked to bits and the added attention he was getting. So let's see, you know, what he's made of now. He's going to come in and he's got a point to prove, Ante, that, you know, he's not easily stopped. Nick Powell seemed to me, I thought he had, like I say, a decent game. He was sort of kicked to bits a bit, wasn't he, on Tuesday night, like I say, and seems to be a common theme here in their plays. I think Maggi, he didn't have a great deal. The ball, yeah, I think he did well with the hold-up play, more than we thought he would do. And his game, what we were warned about his game was he doesn't get involved. He's more of like a penalty box kind of player, you know, stays between the sticks, puts the ball away. But he did seem to, you know, be able to get involved in the build-up, didn't he, and hold it up and winning it and that. So I was quite impressed with him on Tuesday. So I look forward to more of that. Like I say, I was tempted to put Sawyers in instead of Powell. Again, as much as I love Nick Powell, I play him 90 minutes every game. I'm terrified of him getting injured again. that's just the worry I have when he's played twice already this week. Do we want to risk him on a third game? But the same can be said with Sawyers. He's been out since December, start of December. Are we going to risk him playing? You know, he's played a lot of minutes on Tuesday night. Are we going to play him again on Saturday? I think we've got Mario back as well. Mario's going to be on the bench.
Yeah, I believe Mario will be on the bench. You'll have Thompson on the bench.
Brown will be on the bench.
Brown, definitely. Wilmot will come in. With my bench, I think Campbell will be on there. And maybe a Fletcher if needed.
Morgan Fox.
He's got two more.
He's got three games altogether.
Yeah, so obviously everyone was saying, oh, why didn't we play Fox, you know, give time and a rest. He was banned over all competitions.
Yeah, so he's banned for obviously this game
and Barnes. Following.
Yeah, okay. Just one more thing to note as well. Joe Allen's 200th Stoke start.
Wow.
On Saturday, if he starts the game. So yeah, he's been a man who's been in form. Joint winner along with Lewis Baker of the Every Step Along the Way Player of the Month for February.
He's proving all those doubters wrong, isn't he?
So yes, he's now he's got somebody like him and Baker seem to be playing off each other at the minute, don't they? So yeah, long may that continue.
You know how you're saying his 200. You know how you're saying his 200th start.
Yeah,
he has made 200 appearances in total. Well, 209 for total in Stoke. So yeah, for only 10 of them, he's not started since coming in, aside from injury.
Yeah, he's had a, like I say, he's just says that, you know, when he's fit, he's plays, doesn't he?
Oh, he's brilliant.
And I think a lot of, you know, he's played under a lot of managers. He's played under Hughes, Lambert, Rowett,
Jones,
you know, O'Neill. He's been pivotal to all of them. He's been captain for a lot of them.
Yeah.
And, you know, at times you do watch him, you think, you know, what's he giving? But I think now we are seeing the best of Joe Allen, where he can maybe concentrate on his own game. And, you know, long may that continue as well. Just be interesting to see what the summer brings. And whether he's with us after this summer.
If he takes a bit of a wage cut, then hopefully.
Yeah, I mean, what are we thinking then? Are we going with a positive result? I think, especially with the injuries that you've mentioned there for Blackpool, yeah, we should be looking at getting a win and hopefully, you know, in entertainment as well. You know, maybe two, three goals, maybe. You know,
I'm thinking 2-1.
2-1.
Michael's gone with a 2-1. I went for a 1-1. And I know it sounds like I'm being a bit unoptimistic. They, in their last three games, obviously they had a 1-1 draw to Cardiff. And before that, they lost 2-1 to Bournemouth at the very end of a game with a 95th minute winner from Sariki Dembele. But they did, in their last game, also beat Reading 4-1. Which shows that they have got, you know, a lot of quality. A player that we know about, we were linked to in the January transfer window, Josh Bowler, being their best player this season and just showing the quality that he's got and why we were potentially linked to him. And he's linked to a lot of Premier League teams as well. He didn't really have that great form at the start of the season, but he's finding it now. So I'm going with 1-1. I think Bowler will get a goal, and then I think Madge's going to pop up with a goal about 70 minutes in.
Well, I think we're going to go goal crazy on Saturday. I think we need, like I say, if there is the very faintest of faint playoff hopes rest on us getting a really good run going in these next set of games. And I think we're going to go all out for the win, because it's win or bust. There's going to be a packed crowd. The atmosphere should hopefully be buzzing with what happens pre-match and, you know, the celebrations that are going on. I think they can be dangerous as well on the break. I think it's going to be a great game. It's going to end 4-2 to Stoke.
4-2?
Yeah. Madge will get a couple. Powell will get one.
Wow.
Powell will get one and Tyrese will get one.
That is bold.
Bloody hell.
Mike was a bit crazy when he went for his Birmingham prediction.
Well,
wow. I
mean, there's not just us though, is there? We, as always, we've hunted out an opposition supporter, and this time we've got someone from the Seasiders podcast. So here's Connor's thoughts ahead of the game.
This is Connor from the Seasiders pod. In terms of how it's going for Blackpool at the moment, I think most fans are feeling very, very positive around the club. We've got an owner in Simon Sadler and a coach in Neil Critchley that seemed very tuned into the fan base, say all the right things. And I've also got the results to kind of prove it. We could win promotion from League One last season, and in our first season in the Championship are now sitting pretty comfortably mid-table as we get to the business end. No real threat of relegation. Our results have kind of trailed off a little bit recently. I think one win in the last five, and that was a 4-1 thumping of a very poor Reading side. So really my hope for this game is that we're hopefully just able to put in a good performance, hopefully get the win and start to rebuild that confidence as we go towards the end of the season and go to the transfer window rather than rather than limping across, leaving everyone with anxiety for next year. As I say, I think the season's been very, very positive. I think we have done a tremendous job in our first year in the Championship, no threat of relegation. So we can absolutely be pleased with that. But there's no point in making it hard of ourselves as we approach the final few games. So yeah, I think we're hoping for a win, hoping to try and start building momentum again so that we can finish strong and hopefully attract new talent and feel confident going into the next season. Players to watch out for us are probably the obvious one is Josh Bowler, who plays in our right wing. He is just a terrific dribbler of the ball who will run at his man again and again and again, and has made so many defenders at this level just look like fools. Since Christmas, he has really, really picked up in form. He seems to be getting on the end product. He seems to have added end product to his game. He's getting on the end of balls a lot more. I think he's scored, I think it's 5 in his last 7, which is just a phenomenal run of form. His decision making is improved, and now he's so key to what we're doing. A lot of Blackpool fans are hoping we can keep him in the summer, but if not, we'll probably sell him for multi-million pounds, hopefully somewhere between 3 to 5. In terms of a prediction for the match, I think Stoke and Blackpool are two very, very evenly matched sides in terms of the quality we've shown this season. It was a bit gutting for you to get that last minute winner at Bloomfield Road earlier in the season. 10 minutes to go after a fairly, cagey game until that point. I'm hoping it'll be the other way around this time, with a maybe 1-0 win or a 2-1 Blackpool win. I think it will be that tight. I can't see it being, either side steamrolling the other. So my hope is really for that Blackpool 2-1 win. We've done well against sides that like to pass the ball, play football, like Bournemouth, Fulham. Stoke seem to actually be, counter to my perception at least, from what I've seen, you seem to be really, really good at passing the ball, moving it along. You've got this new sexy Stoke reputation. So my hope is that it'll be a good game of football, and it's the style of play that we normally perform better against. So yeah, 2-1 win to Blackpool is probably my prediction. But like I say, we just want to start putting in good performances and building momentum.
Cheers, Connor. Thanks for that. Yeah, so much appreciated there. And naturally, of course, we now lead into the one and only Graeme McGarry. So let's hear what the local radio sensation's got for us this week.
Hi there, you Potters podcast people. Hello there, it's Graeme McGarry back again after the international break. I hope you enjoyed your little breather from your football. This is Graeme McGarry with that Potters prediction. Let's hope we get it right this weekend. Stoke City 2, Hull City 0. Stoke 1, West Brom 0. Stoke are ready to win at home. 2-0 for the Potters.
Hi there, you Potters predictors. Once again, we're getting ready for another Championship game, this time at home to Blackpool. It's a week, of course, when the club celebrates 50 years of winning the League Cup. It's been a good week for those players who are still involved. Now, can those players of today get 3 points to end the week on a high? It's been a bit disappointing over the last couple of games for Michael O'Neill's side, but he has to put all those disappointments behind him, and it's time now to go on a real long unbeaten run if they're to make those end-of-season playoffs. Blackpool, well, they've done well and consolidated in the Championship. They've got one or two good flair players as well in their locker. But Stoke City surely should have enough to take the 3 points at the Bet365. And once again, I think there's going to be goals. Both teams will score. Stoke to win it 2-1.
Standard 2-1 win from Graham there, Mike.
Yeah, he's copied off me, hasn't he?
You're not copying in this time.
Not this time, no. Must admit, he's only actually predicted the opposition team winning once this season.
And who was that?
I don't even think he thought Fulham would beat us, did he?
No, he said like we'd win them 2-0 or something like that. But the one thing I like about McGarry is he's still hopeful for that playoff push if we want to get it. he's still hopeful about it. He'll do it, you know, last game of the season and still say it when we're about 15 points off playoff.
The thing is, though, we'll go and do it and he'll be like, look, I told you so. You shouldn't stop believing.
As he's counting his money. I've got a good price on Stoke in March for playoffs. I mean, is there much else to say? I mean,
no, I think we're going to get screwed on this quiz, I think, I'm sure. But...
Oh, yeah. Shouldn't have reminded him.
Right, so shall we move on to the quiz then?
Let's go for it.
So, yes, this week's quiz. Now, you may have remembered I mentioned that Joe Allen is making his 200th appearance for Stoke. 200 starts.
Is it going to be players who have made more than 200 starts for the club?
It is not.
Oh.
So, yes, so Joe Allen, with his 209 appearances, is number one out of the current squad, as in he's made the most appearances for Stoke out of the current squad. Can you name the other 9 players in the top 10?
Right, okay. My God.
Okay, well, let's think about this rationally, even people we don't like, right? So, we have to give this an order as well.
In this current squad, to make more than how many?
Top to bottom.
So, top to bottom. It's not about number, it's just about how many appearances they made for Stoke.
Yeah.
Do you want me to tell you what the number is for 10th?
Yeah.
67 appearances.
God.
Okay. Did you say Joe Allen was number one?
Joe Allen's number one.
Number one. Okay, well, behind him, I must admit, Sam Klukas has got to be up there.
Yeah, he played pretty much 2 whole seasons for us, hasn't he? I think Tommy Smith's going to be up there.
Okay, so do you want to tell me how many appearances you reckon Sam Klukas has got? Just a guess, you know, nothing. He's in there. He is number 2 on the list. But how many do you reckon he's had? Joanne's had 209.
150?
198.
127, Klukas.
Really? Bloody hell. Big drop there, then. He's way ahead, Alan.
Yeah. Okay.
So, Tommy Smith, potentially?
Tommy yeah. Smith is 3rd. How many do you think he's had?
100.
Bang on 100. Crystal Palace was his 100th game.
Oh, yeah, I remember seeing something about that.
Okay. So behind, James Chester, you know.
Chester's got to be in there.
Chester has just sneaked in, number 10, 67.
Oh, okay.
Okay. Current players.
No, he'd be too low,
I think.
Too low.
How about Jacob Brown?
Go with Jacob Brown.
Go Jacob.
86 appearances. Yep. 6th place.
Okay. Could Fletcher be up there? That's the thing. Like,
yeah, obviously, a couple of seasons.
He's had a few injuries as well, hasn't he?
Go Fletcher.
Fletcher.
Yeah.
71 appearances.
Oh God.
Only 44 starts, though, 27 sub appearances. So, yeah, them sub appearances have got him up there.
Yeah.
Oh, blimey. I mean, Harry Souter, has he been in long enough?
It's also like Tyrese. Obviously, he's been in long enough, but he's got laid off last season with an injury.
I'm thinking of the current squad. They're all that new.
Yeah. Powell's got to be up there, surely.
Yeah, go Nick Powell. Yeah, go Nick Powell.
Nick Powell, 90 appearances, 4th place.
So which ones are we after now?
So you're after 5th. There's 2 joint 7ths and 9th.
Harry Souter?
You going with Harry Souter?
Yeah.
Yeah, might be the 9th guy.
He's 11th. Is 63 really? Appearances. Yeah, 63 games.
Are we counting players out on loan or not?
There aren't any on the list. The highest on loan is Peter Atiebo and Tom Edwards, who are joint 12th with 51 games each.
Wow.
So Tyrese then?
Tyrese has got to be on there.
Tyrese is 5th with 87 games. So incidentally, for those Tyrese haters who love Jacob Brown, not that I'm dissing Jacob Brown in any way here, but Tyrese Campbell has played 87 games to Jacob Brown's 86 and managed 23 goals to Brown's 15. And actually, Campbell's only made 50 starts, whereas Jacob Brown has made a lot more. So yeah,
we need a joint seventh now.
Yes. Joint seventh and ninth. Oh, no, so you've got ninth, didn't you, Stephen Fletcher?
Well, I'd say Tymon.
Tymon could potentially be.
He could be that low.
You could also think maybe Jordan Thompson, but it's... God.
This is tricky now, isn't it?
Yeah, when you get somewhere like it's joint, I want to put Thompson up there, but I don't think he's made enough.
Tymon for one of them, Dan.
Yeah.
Tymon is one of them, yeah. 61 starts, 13 sub, 74 games. So that's the number you're looking for. Somebody else has made 74.
I want to go Thompson. I want to go for... I think throughout the seasons, obviously, he's been in and out of the team. But I feel like, considering he's come off the bench quite a bit, he's going to have totaled up. And at the moment, he's seeming reliable. He's been a quality player since he's been here.
Okay, go with that then.
Go with Thompson.
Jordan Thompson, 51 starts, 23 sub appearances.
Dan, you made us panic for a sec.
74 games, yes.
Nice.
So, yeah, there's top 10. Like I say, Suter, Atibo, Edwards were next. Then Joe Bursic, and then Morgan Fox is 15th. And obviously, anyone below that, Wilmot Vrančić, people have all only joined this season.
Is that two successful quizzes and two
podcasts? Yeah, done well, mate.
It is.
Next podcast will be a 0 out of 10 or whatever I'm calling it.
We're going to have to get tougher ones.
Now, Dan, we like these ones. Please don't.
yes, so I think that pretty much rounds it up, doesn't it? No midweek podcast for you this week. That was a one-off. Sorry, people. You're going to have to wait a whole 7 days for us.
You're going to have to wait until next season for a midweek, potentially.
Although we did tease you earlier on that we may be in touch with Kieran Maguire, so we'll be at his beck and call by all means. If whenever he wants us, we'll be there, won't we, Mike?
Yep. So we're not going to give you much notice. It will literally be we'll complete the podcast with Kieran, and we'll probably put it out the same day or very latest the following morning. So while we're saying nothing for 7 days, it could be literally landing with no notice at all. So if you, whatever platform you're on, if you've got a subscribe button or whatever it is, then just make sure you hit it and then you won't miss it.
And whilst you're there, if you're on iTunes, give us a nice review, because we haven't got many of them yet. And we know you're listening, so...
It's because we don't ask for them, innit? That's our problem, mate. We just assume everyone loves us.
We're not turning to YouTubers. Go and like and subscribe so we get there. That's what I do.
I was going to say, I've seen a certain YouTuber, Anflux, I think his name is.
Oh, mate.
Does his Formula One. Yeah, he said, like and subscribe, why take this corner?
Anyway.
Not quite that bad.
So, 3 points to the Potters on Saturday, and we'll be all happy, won't we?
Yeah.
We will, mate. Up the Potters.
Up the Potters. 6 points better off when we see you next. See you later, folks.
Bye.